won't you?
Do you or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
When I took my doggy Einstein to the vet for his checkup, the vet showed me one tooth that had a little redness around the gum. And he said he'd have his assistant clean the tooth. Great, no problem. He wasn't like some vets. They're the kind of pigs that, in my mind, that have to anesthetize a dog, do the whole mouth, charge $1,000. So great. He had me wait in the waiting room. And a few minutes later, the assistant comes out and says, she couldn't clean my Einstein's teeth because he tried to bite her. That can't be. My dog would not bite anybody. Sweetest thing in the world. I've had my teeth cleaned a million times. Worst I ever felt was a bit of mild discomfort for a moment. I figured probably she was inept. And she hurt Einstein's gum more than a little bit. So I took Einstein home, and I Googled dog teeth cleaning and found vets selling those $1,000 teeth cleanings. And much as I love Einstein, with his gums perfect except for that one spot, I wasn't spending no $1,000. So I searched a bit further, and I found Maya B. She's not a vet, but she has a zillion five-star Yelp reviews for doing non-anesthetic dog and occasionally cat dental cleaning. She does it by putting Poochie into a snuggly, like a little baby. And she treats the doggy like a little baby, like a dog whisperer, like a loving mommy. She plays with him, does all kinds of stuff before she starts a thing. She even puts the instruments next to the doggy's nose so this is nothing bad. And she charges $70, not $1,000. Einstein has now had his teeth cleaned by Maya B. for years. And although he will soon be 10, which is 70 in doggy years, his gums look great. So in yet another attempt to do a Studs Terkel-like interview, let's find out what it's really like to be a... This is one of the weirder segments I've ever done on the show. What is it really like to be a dog teeth cleaner? And actually, the surprisingly complex politics that are involved in the profession. Maya B., welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
Thank you.
Well, you're a Berkeley grad. I imagine that they don't have a dog dental cleaning major at Berkeley. What'd you major in?
I was actually something called a social science field major, which is basically I studied basically rhetoric.
Right. Well, no, I always think of rhetoric actually as a very good field because the idea of rhetoric is argumentation, written in argument, you know, making solid arguments. So I would think that would be among the more practical majors because it's applicable to every possible career and to life. Was it actually a good major, rhetoric?
I think so. I kind of agree with you. I think it's structured on how to think and structure your thinking to make a solid argument. So there's a lot of logic involved and rational thinking and challenging rational thinking. So, yeah, I think it's probably applicable to pretty much anything.
Well, there wasn't exactly, though, a solid line between that major and dog teeth cleaning.
No,
did
not
you
at all.
Did you have any career plans at that point?
I actually was planning to go to law school. And, in fact, I applied to law school twice during my 20s. I got in both times and deferred both times. I think when I was confronted with the reality of how much it would cost. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I had friends who were attorneys, and I think I just really thought through what is it going to be like for me to go.
What scared you? What was it that they told you about being a lawyer that made you say, I'm
the
not
thing that
this?
Scared me was coming out of school with a bunch of loans and having to go for a big corporate law firm and sell my soul in order to pay off my loans. And that I knew already I was not temperamentally set up for working in an office.
Everybody in the Bay Area goes to law school because they want to do public interest law, and the number of public interest law jobs are trivial, and they pay you zero. They expect to do pro bono work, et cetera. Is that a fair?
Yeah. I actually listened to the few attorneys I knew who said, you know, it's not going to be what you think it is. It's not nearly as much fun when you get out and you don't end up working in the kind of law that you think you're going to.
Right, and defending insurance companies against little old ladies who get, slip and fall. Right. So was there a moment that you decided to try to be a dental teeth cleaner as your career?
I saw an ad in the paper, so I was job searching. I had just left a job that I hated. I was working in an office, and I was really miserable, and I was applying to other jobs that were similarly soul-sucking. And I saw an ad. It was essentially for a free training in exchange for a work contract. So I had to sign into several years of working for this company in exchange for them training me for free.
Training you to do dog teeth cleaning?
Yes, yes.
There was an ad for that. Now, why would you have thought up front that that was not soul-sucking? It seems like, you know, all you're doing is scraping away tartar and calculus from between teeth and gums. Why would that not be soul-sucking?
You know, I had worked with animals before on a volunteer basis, and I was an animal lover, and I don't know, it just appealed to me, the thought of working with animals. So, but yeah, it was a risk. And I remember actually my mom saying to me, like, this is crazy.
UC Berkeley graduate, and you're going to be going and scaling calculus.
Right. And also you're going to sign into a contract to work for somebody and you have no idea what you're doing. You're going to hate it, and then you're going to be stuck. And I just thought, well, I already hate my job, and I hated the job I had before that. So the worst thing that could happen is that I would hate my job for a few years, but it was a new experience. So I said, whatever, I'm going to try it, and, you know, it's the best decision I ever made.
Now, did you know right away? I mean, when I've watched you do, you know, but not just my doggy, but others, and you have like this, you're this dog whisperer person. You know, you totally get them calm and fabulous. Was it the first right away? When did you feel like this was going to be your life or your career?
I think I knew pretty quickly. I mean, the training itself was kind of a bummer because it was in Southern California, and I had to go down there and be down there for like 6 weeks. So I was away from my partner, and it was stressful. But I would say that the work itself, I knew right away I had an affinity for it, and the people who were training me also were like, you have a knack for this.
Yeah,
so I think, and I was training with somebody else at the time who did not. So I think having that kind of juxtaposition of seeing that I picked it up very quickly and I have an affinity for animals already. So I think it was a good fit for me temperamentally.
But here you were, somebody who went to UC Berkeley, which is kind of not exactly an entrepreneurial school, and you were majoring in rhetoric, and you did a bunch of these crappy office jobs, and then you're working for this big company. What made you make this entrepreneurial decision to say, I am going to be self-employed, and I am going to be Maya B., the you know, dog dentist, dog dental cleaner thing?
I wish I could say that it was that conscious of a decision. It really wasn't. I kind of fell into it, and it was truly mind-opening because like you said, I had this more traditional upbringing. You know, my family is very professionally oriented, and, you know, everybody in my family, I'm the least educated person in my family.
Wow.
Everybody has at least a master's degree or more. My dad's got a PhD and came up in a very academic family and a very professionally oriented family. It had never occurred to me that I could do something like this. Truly, it never occurred to me, and it blew my mind to have that world open up to me. All these people, there are so many people in the world who do random jobs that are not, they don't fit into a cookie cutter box. And yeah, it was very eye-opening.
So how'd you go from working for the company, though, to starting to see people privately?
People
and doggies.
Yeah. I worked for that company for about 4 years. Mm. The contract that I had was a 3-year contract, and I knew probably about 2 years in that I was not going to stay with them after my contract expired, even though that it was their expectation that I would.
Why? What made you think that
you know, there were some things about the way that they worked that I wasn't really happy with.
Be specific, because that's a bit less.
Well,
specific.
So I'll say, first of all, that company is no longer in business, so I don't have to worry too much about smearing them. And they were fine. But the what I do is actually very political and contentious within the veterinary world.
Right.
And that company, I think, had taken a very strong stance in opposition to the vet board. So it was very political, and I didn't know that going into it. And so there was a little bit of chagrin at not having been informed more. So I felt like I was kind of plopped into the middle of a political legal battle that I wasn't emotionally prepared for. And I felt that the way that they were doing business was kind of stirring that pot in a way that I wouldn't personally choose to do. So, you know, I kind of made a decision that I actually almost quit. I almost quit, not quit them, but almost quit the profession, but decided instead that I was going to do it in a way that felt good for me, that I felt I could have pride in and not do it the same way that they were doing it. So
now I would think, you know, kind of the activist way is, you mean, the, you know, the veterinary profession closes ranks, say we have we are doctors of veterinary medicine and we have all of these things, and you know, and they would want to shut you down, and mm-hmm. the, you know, the reality is that as long as you're referring out dogs that have teeth that go beyond what a, you know, teeth cleaning can do, you know, it's,
right.
it's great to be
but
paying
$70.
What was
that wasn't the way that that company operated. Their kind of stance was that we could do any dog as long as they're not super aggressive. So, you know, the way that I was trained was to clean any dog's teeth. And, you know, sometimes I look back and I was pretty horrified. Mm. I'm horrified now to think about some of the dog's teeth that I worked on that I would not touch with a 10-foot pole today.
Okay.
So I think that was the biggest thing, was that, it, you know, the veterinary stance against the procedure, they have kind of a general stance of like, well, this doesn't have any value. But I think the truth is it has value for a small subset of animals, and you need to select that group properly, which is what I have made a point of doing for myself. So
we're going to talk a little bit, a lot about what you actually do in your own practice, how you screen dogs, what do you do with a dog that is got abscess and pus and all the rest of it in his gums. But first, what the heck does this have to do with work? You're listening to Work with Marty Nemco. I am talking with Maya B. She does dental teeth cleaning. As you know, I do a semi-regular series on this show called What Is It Really Like to Be A? Done everything from prostitutes to psychiatrists. And I am a big fan of Maya B. and what she does. And I guess I'm a cheapskate at heart. When I can get something done for $70, it would cost $1,000 if a vet did it. And know that she would refer out if my doggie had bad gums. I thought I would bring her on the show and talk about it. So, okay. So let's talk about, so you said it kind of just happened. So you quit. How did you end up starting, it almost sounds like by accident, becoming self-employed?
Well, so I decided that when my contract was up that I was going to leave that company. And that was a period where I was agonizing a little over whether to stay in this profession because of the contentiousness with the vet board. And I think I just, you know, if I hadn't had the dog that I had at that time, I probably would have quit. Mm. You know, my dog, it was like your dog, Einstein, in that she had very good teeth naturally. So I was able to see firsthand that what I was doing had some value for that particular client. So it just, it gave me a different viewpoint than what the tag, you know, the tagline that vets were saying, which was like, this is, you can't do it and it doesn't have any benefit. And, you know, I could see firsthand that I was doing just fine with my dog and that she, her teeth were very healthy in spite of the fact that I hadn't taken her to the vet to do a full dental. So I stayed in business. I stayed with that company for an extra year while I was starting to build up a couple of clinics of my own on the side.
A couple of – you went from working – you built a couple of clinics on your own while you were working?
So the way that they worked is that they would work out of grooming shops mm-hmm. and vet pet stores. So I would go there and they would have a sign, you know, a sign up, and people would sign up and I would come and clean the dog's teeth. My contract with them prohibited me from competing with them in that venue. Mm-hmm. But I just by fluke, one of my clients referred me to PetVet, which is the main mm-hmm. clinic that I work mm-hmm. out of now. And the vets there hired me to come and do a clinic for them.
I see.
So that was kind of my main, and to this day is still my main clinic that I work out of, although I've also developed a relationship with several other local vets.
And so that's how you don't fight with them. You basically say, I stay within the range of what I can do without having medical expertise. That
right.
is prophylactically, preventatively right. deal with teeth just to make sure there isn't too much calculus or whatever. But if the dog already has, you know, pus, very badly inflamed gums, bad recession, all the rest of it, then you refer out. Is that
right.
fair?
Yes, yeah. Okay. Yeah. We turn away about probably 70% of the animals that come
right.
to us. So
okay. So what I'm interested in is you have this gift. So how – for anybody who – why don't you just describe what goes through your mind when you're about to do a teeth cleaning on a dog to make sure – to maximize the chances that that doggy will become like butter in your hands?
some of it is not conscious on my part, actually. It is, I think, just from years of experience. You know, there is an assessment of the animal. Animals are like people. They have their own personalities and temperaments. So there's an assessment that I make of what kind of approach I need to take. And
what do you see? Let's say you see a dog. What do you see?
So some dogs are fearful and they need to be reassured.
How do you do that?
Just about being calm. I mean, it's calm, I think, is the main thing. Calm and reassurance. I mean, you have to kind of let them know that you're going to be responsive to their fears and not force them to do anything in a traumatic way. So, you know, for a dog, like for a dog that is a large or a medium-sized dog, I would probably approach more cautiously. A small dog, I'll often pick them up right away and just hold them in my arms so that they can kind of get the feeling of like, I'm a friend, I'm going to hold you, but I'm in charge and I'm calm, but I'm not hurting you. And then as far as the actual teeth cleaning itself, you know, I always, little things, like letting the animal sniff each instrument before I put it in their mouth. Often I'll start on the canine tooth and get like just touch the tooth and let them feel what it feels like to have the tooth scraped before I really get in there and kind of give them a chance to respond. Little details like that, you know.
What I notice, of course, is you putting the animal in a snuggly and not rushing to get started.
Yeah.
You take your time, and it only takes 30 seconds or something, but little soft voice, little hugging, like treating like a little baby, little bit of petting, and then, like you said, putting the instruments in their nose, you know, not in their nose,
right.
Next to their nose so they can smell it. It's really sweet. Okay, so who's more difficult, the dog or the person, or the dog people?
Well, just the fact that you're asking that question. You know, it's different. And a lot of what I do is manage the client as well. I mean, one of the things that I decided when I went into business for myself is that I was going to let clients come in and watch while I worked because it's something that the previous company...
It's a fabulous thing to watch.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the previous company that I worked for had a policy against that.
It's so sweet. It's like an open kitchen, you know. They're not going to be rats running around in their kitchen if it's an open kitchen.
Right.
And if I watch you doing it, all I'm going to be doing, all I am is reassured.
Right. That's how I feel. I always felt like I wouldn't want my dog having some procedure done, you know, in the back room without me there. So yeah, and you know, I really believe it upped my game too. It made me better at what I do because I had to make sure I was doing it well and not mistreating animals and being very conscientious about how I treated the animal. But it does add a whole other element because it's not just the animal that you're managing; it's also the client. And often clients are very anxious seeing their dogs wrapped up or restrained because it's frequent that animals will resist a little bit. You know, they're nervous, so.
Any tips on how to deal with anxious people?
You know, I just try to be straightforward. You know, and sometimes I'll see people really getting anxious and I just deal with it straightforward. You know, it's okay for you to be anxious. I would prefer for you not to talk to your animal because I want them to develop a relationship with me. People are very responsive, you know. Occasionally I'll get somebody who's completely freaked out, but most of the time I think people are just reassured being in there and being able to talk to me and watch while the procedure's happening and see that their animal is not being tortured.
All right. Let's give our listeners a chance to ask a question or two. So, dear listeners, if you have a question for Maya B., who does dog and occasionally cat teeth cleaning, you're welcome to call. The phone number here, Work with Marty Nemko, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Most small businesses, their biggest problem is getting clients. What do you do to get clients?
You know, I've been really fortunate in that I have not had to do any marketing. I think that because of the nature of the way my business is set up, where I'm working in vet clinics, generally it's the vet clinic that supplies
location,
me.
Location,
yeah.
Location.
Yeah. So I have, and it's set up a little different in each of my different clinics. So at the Pet Vet Clinics, which is a low cost clinic.
By the way, it's at 48th and Broadway in Oakland. It's a very busy, kind of a funky little pet food store, and then she's got this little kind of small cubicle in the back. That's perfectly fine.
It's a great – Pet Vet is a great business. They also have another location in El Cerrito, by the way.
Oh, is that? Okay.
Yeah, so it's a low-cost clinic, and definitely if people don't know about it, it's worth checking out.
It's very crowded. I was always wondering because it's, you know, it's not very prominent, yet it's very crowded all the time. Yeah,
it's crowded because they offer really valuable service at a pretty – reasonable rate, but it is a walk-in clinic, so it's not a full-service clinic, and you can't make appointments. So,
you do
make an appointment with me for the teeth cleaning, but the vet service there.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Is a walk-in, yeah.
Okay, so you don't do anything at all to market. Okay, so you're making it sound like the Is this something, honestly, if I were your brother or your sister, and I don't know squat about dental teeth cleaning, but I say to myself, it can't be too hard as long as I know what I need to refer out. Basically, I'm just cleaning away schmutz from the margins between tooth and gum. Mm-hmm. Would you encourage me to start a business like that or no?
So, first of all, just to address what you just said about as long as I refer out and as long as I identify, that's actually the real skill in what I do. You know, the learning how to clean teeth is not rocket science. Anybody, I think, with basic good motor skills and, you know, basic skills with handling animals can learn to do that pretty quickly. It's much harder to know that, to assess the animal's mouth. Mm. And that's something that I didn't, you know, it took me years to develop.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
all
so,
right.
you know, okay. in the beginning, I look back and I did not have that skill for a long
okay.
time.
All
it
right.
developed over a long time, and that's just experience.
Thank you for sharing.
Yeah.
Okay, that said, that it's going to take a few years to have that crucial,
right.
crucial expertise.
Right.
Now what?
So I would say absolutely. I mean, what I do is awesome. It's an awesome job in so many ways.
Oh,
I mean, both
God.
In terms of the actuality of what I do physically and, you know, what I feel I'm contributing, but also in terms of the setup of my day-to-day life. Like,
flexible.
It is an incredibly flexible job. I can take vacation whenever I want. I can rearrange my schedule when I need to.
What about your back? I would think that you're sitting there with it's got to be very
yeah.
hard leaning over the dogs.
It is a very physically demanding job
right.
and not for everybody in that regard. So if
you
have back problems, you're not. It's not a job for you.
How do you protect your back, kiddo?
I have had back, you know, mm-hmm. strain. I haven't had a bad back anything in a while. I think that over the years my body has acclimated and I've learned some skills that, you know, motor skills, taking care of myself. You know, at one point I had injury to my neck, I think, from straining my head forward in a particular way. And I learned to deal with that just by having to. But it's certainly a job. You have to be physically flexible to do it because there are many cases, especially when I'm working with old dogs, where I have to contort myself in order to accommodate their limitations. I don't want to hurt them. So I will find myself literally like a pretzel
yeah.
trying to get the right angle and visual. So
why don't you use a hydraulic table so they can go up and down for the right height? So you're not you do it on the you're on the ground. You're almost
yeah.
like doing meditation Buddha style. Why wouldn't you do it? Having you be standing and having them on a table of some sort or a chair,
so
dental chair.
A lot of it just has to do with being able to physically get them in a good position to have control over their movement. You know, that is the biggest component. They have to be still because you're working with sharp instruments. And if their body is free, they have a lot more physical ability to move.
Got
so
it.
I'm, you know, the most important thing is kind of restraining their body. And then my hands are free to work with their head. There are people who have done it with the animal on the table. And what I have found is that while it's pretty easy to do the fascial surfaces, which are the outward facing surfaces, it's really hard to do the lingual mm. surfaces because you have to actually open their mouth and hold them still while you're doing that. And it's basically impossible to do that on a table. Now, I say that. I'm sure there's somebody out there who can do it and has learned that way. I didn't learn that way. So this is the way that I do it. And I don't feel that I have tried doing it on tables before and I don't feel it's as safe.
Okay. Off the air, we were talking a little bit about what really helps ensure good gums for doggies, and it's exactly the same as with humans. We talked about the fact that, you know, I'm going to brag a little bit. I take my Einstein for a vigorous hike 6 days a week, so he gets his exercise. I give him great quality food, and I give him these great marrow bones that I get from the butcher, so he's constantly, using his gums so it increases the circulation. My engineer who's listening to the show actually has a question. You also advocate toothbrushing. Do you, and I know you don't advocate using toothpaste. Tell us the story.
So my feeling about toothpaste is that it actually makes brushing the teeth more difficult for exactly the reason that your engineer is stating, which is that you try to brush their teeth and the dog tries to eat
mm-hmm,
the toothpaste because
mm-hmm.
it's flavored, which is, you know, the inspiration behind the flavor toothpaste is that it's appealing to the dog, which I think is great for certain dogs who are really fearful. But mostly I find the toothpaste to be a hindrance
I had exactly the same experience. I bought the same thing that she bought, chicken-flavored toothpaste. And exactly, my dog loved licking it but wouldn't let me clean the teeth.
Yeah.
So how important teeth cleaning is kind of a pain. I tried it, and as much as I love my doggy, it was kind of a pain in the butt. So I gave it up, and I just said, as long as I can do the exercise with my dog and feed him really well and get in the bones, you know, which is easier and more fun and he likes better, it's fine. Do I really need to – do my dear listeners, do they need to clean their dog's teeth with – or they just come to you every 6 months or a year?
Yes, they do need to brush their dog's teeth. I think, Marty, you're really fortunate.
Einstein is in
a small percentage.
I see.
He really has pretty good teeth naturally.
Yeah.
And – But the vast majority of my clients,
okay,
I literally browbeat them into brushing because truly brushing is the most significant thing.
Okay.
Truly it is. The teeth cleaning is basically irrelevant in the long term if the animal is predisposed to gum disease. The only thing that's going to really prevent it is regular, and by regular I mean daily brushing.
Okay. So, all right, let's go back to the – we wanted to do a little public service there for all the doggy owners. And they're not doggy – you know, owner is kind of the wrong word. Sometimes I think my dog owns me. They're people. The dog's in their people.
Companion.
Master
yeah.
is even worse. You
yeah.
know, certainly here in the Bay Area, we don't know the hierarchy. It's too hierarchical.
The same thing. I usually say dog owners, but I don't feel that that's quite right.
What is – they're people.
They're people.
My dog's people, you know, rather than – anyway. Oh, we're so politically correct. Okay, last question, back to the career thing. So what advice, since you say it is a good career, given now you've been doing this a while, how many years now?
This is my 16th year.
Okay, there you go. So you're really a veteran. So what advice would you give to somebody who wanted to go in this business in terms of training, in terms of marketing, because they may not be as lucky as you are, as skilled as you are, or whatever. What advice would you give if I'm your brother or sister and I say I want to go into what would you advise you give me around training, marketing, running my – it is a business in the end. It's a service business, but it is a small business. What advice would you give me?
Well, I would say particular to this business, it would be important to find a mentor, you know, someone like me who is willing to kind of help you out.
So if somebody called you and said, hi, I listened to you on Marty Nemco's show, would you mentor me? What would you say?
I would say, no, I don't have time for that. But there are companies out there. I mean, you can do what I did. There are some companies that will train in exchange for work contracts. I'm not super familiar with that, but I see them every once in a while. I think really there is no formal training for it.
Would you work for a vet? Would you say, I want to learn this? And
you can't learn this from a vet. It's not taught in vet schools.
Whoa.
And vets don't train, you know. I mean, that's why I have a job.
Yeah,
because if they did, then vet techs would be doing it and I'd be out of business. So, and that might be the way that it goes eventually. Mm. But, you have to find somebody who knows how to do it and will train you to do
it. So let's say after you're trained for a while and you've learned, especially the training about the gum, you know, when you need to refer out, which is very important. What advice would you give them about setting up the business and succeeding in the business and also just
this is something that is in demand everywhere. So I think not worrying too much about obviously you, as a business owner, you always have to worry about getting clients. But truly, I have found for myself that if I just focused on being really good at what I do and offering a valuable service, that people come to you. You know, I think as long as you're – I think that's true for any profession. I think we're so fixated on making money that often the service or product that's being provided gets lost in that. And if people just focused on really the quality of what they're doing and offering – everything else kind of falls into place, you know?
It's really kind of true. In every profession, there are people who are in huge demand and long waiting lists, and then there are others, including in my profession, who are struggling. I get calls all the time from career counselors saying, could you refer somebody to me?
Right.
Desperate. Okay. So if people do want to have their doggies or their cats teeth evaluated to see if, in fact, you can clean them or you do need to refer out, how do they go about finding you?
I have a website. It's pettooth.com.
Pettooth.com.
Yep. And you can actually schedule an evaluation appointment online through my website.
Perfect. So. And I like to give out – it's like $16 for an evaluation.
$16 for the evaluation.
And then afterwards, $70 for the cleaning.
$70 for dogs and $55 for cats. Yeah.
That's, you know –
pretty straightforward.
And pretty honorable too, kiddo.
Thank you.
Thank you, Maya B., for being my guest. Again, her name is Maya B. She's got a long kind of a Romanian name or something like
Croatian.
That. Croatian name, yeah. So she was commercial enough to change her, or at least for public consumption.
I didn't want to have to spell it every
B-E.
Day.
It's my, so you can also just Google her. Oh, you got to read her Yelp reviews. I have to say that.
Oh,
you
thanks.
Know, because there aren't always phony Yelp reviews, but she's got a ton of them, and they're almost all awesome, or maybe they're all awesome. Just Google her name, Maya B, M-A-I-A, and B like in bzzz. And that's it. Anyway, Maya B, thanks a lot for being my guest.
Thank
I work
you
with Marty
so
Nimco.
Much. Such a pleasure.
I told you it'd be fun.
It was fun. Thanks, Marty.
Okay. So now, my dear listeners, I would like to give you a more fun work life. And the way in which I do that is with what I call workovers, with no pummeling involved. And the price is certainly right, even cheaper than $70, $69.95 if you act now. No, it's free. Just call the phone number here at KELW. This is my pro bono work. Happy to do it for you for free. Whatever your career conundrum, whether you're 16 or 76, unemployed, well-employed, and still unhappy, clerk, CEO, for-profit, non-profit, there's always a way I can usually be of help, sometimes even massive help. The phone number here, Work With Marty Nimco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And before I even give out the number to somebody calling, I like that. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Hi, I am a first-time listener. I'm from the Bay Area. I'm calling all the way from Philadelphia.
Great.
You're so great. I am 32 and just changed careers to a new nurse. So I am a brand new registered nurse. I was previously in public health. And I am in a horribly toxic environment, crappy job that I have that I want to leave. And my question is, I've been there 2 months and I do not feel like I can quit before I have another job lined up. So my question is, do I disclose this current job when I believe the one that would look bad that I've left a job after 2 months, and two, I know I would get a bad reference?
Tell me, what is it that makes, what is the reason you consider it toxic?
So I, you know, nursing is a very tricky, you know,
yep.
medical skill.
Yep.
This is a very busy outpatient clinic that usually doesn't take brand new nurses. I was one of the few exceptions, and because of my public health background. And they put me with a preceptor, which is the equivalent of a mm-hmm. trainer who mm-hmm. had no training being a preceptor.
Mm-hmm.
She's 23. She didn't want to do it. She wouldn't teach and wouldn't let me, you know, practice any skills for the first month.
Okay, I'm going to stop you. No, I think you're right. You need a fresh start. You are
yeah.
new at this. I don't want you to be saddled with this. I would indeed be you know, you say you can't afford to quit. Either if you can financially afford to quit, I would, because it's got to be very stressful working in that situation and depressing, and it would come off in the interviews. But if you have to keep your job, I would make priority. It's like we love ourselves enough to go and eat right or to exercise or whatever. I want you to love yourself enough that you're going to make one or two inquiries every evening or every Saturday to a prospective employer, whether it be answering an ad or reaching out and networking or going to a meeting of the nurses, the local nursing society, whatever the hell you need to do to get your butt out of there. Because, right, you're going to be hurting patients because right now you sound like you're not fully competent. Unfortunately, most training programs are not good enough at training people. You learn on the job, and I don't want you killing patients. 435,000 people die every year because of medical errors. And so we want you to protect patients. We need to get you out of there into an environment that is not a fast-paced urgent care clinic. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So my question is, do I pretend I never had this?
Yes.
Job?
I say it's only 2 months. I would absolutely. It would unfairly saddle you. I'm looking at you. The value of your work is the lifetime of your contribution versus screw-ups. And if you're going to have a hard time getting in, you've had all this expensive training and it's hard to get into nursing school these days. If you're going to have a hard time getting the job because of this 2 months, it's unfair to the patients. There's going to be a real big nursing shortage. I would not, in this case, disclose that. Just leave it off the resume. Describe yourself as a new graduate. And by describing yourself as a new graduate, then the only place they're going to hire you are places, hopefully, that are going to offer better training. And I urge you, in the interview process, to be completely candid and saying, I am a new graduate. I want to be. I'm very aware of how important it is to be a quality practitioner, and I need to work in an environment where I will get enough preceptorship that I can be a quality nurse. That's going to make the right employer want to hire you and the wrong ones not. Does that make sense?
Yeah, Yeah, definitely.
All right. I wish you the best of luck. Nurses are so important, and they're going to become ever more important under Obamacare as ever more people are covered, and there's going to be not enough doctors or nurse practitioners. A lot is going to go on the shoulders of RNs. Be a good one.
I will be. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Thanks very much for calling from Philadelphia. I love the people here on the Internet. It's exciting to feel that you might have a little reach beyond even the Bay Area, although the Bay Area is plenty big enough. Anyway,
I would come back if I could afford to work to live there.
Well, yeah, but you know, nurses at Kaiser make like $130,000 a year.
I know, but they can't hire anyone outside the union. So it's really hard to get into Kaiser, even if you know someone.
How do you get into the union?
So you have to take a per diem position first.
So look, if your dream is to do that, why wouldn't you do that? Why wouldn't you take some per diem, you know, position, whether it be anywhere for a while, where you can get good preceptorship? If that's your dream, that's not an unrealistic dream. You're not asking to be the next Oprah. You're not asking to play starting guard for the Golden State Warriors. You're wanting to be a nurse in the Bay Area. You know what? There's going to be a lot of need for them. Why wouldn't you do that?
Yeah, I guess that's a thought. I'd have to move across the country again, but I could do it.
You know, it's a fun adventure. Put all your crap in your car and drive across the country in your old beater or whatever it is. Stay in hostels, stay in whatever place you care for your money, and find that per diem job, maybe in the kind of place that your gut tells you is a place that would, maybe in a certain specialty, a certain kind of place, and then you get what you want.
Yeah, that's good advice.
All right, thanks a lot for calling Work with Marty Namco.
Thank you. Take care.
You're welcome. Phone number again, if you want to work over any kind of work-related problem, I love your calls, and I love to be helpful. Phone number, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Back to the phones. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Hi. Is this me?
It is you.
Oh, great. Okay, so I wanted to tell you my work history briefly, and basically what I'm hoping for is help with a focus of a professional focus and identifying something that would be that I would like to do and that I can get enough money and I can find a job in.
Okay.
Basically, I'm 50 years old, and I, out of high school, I had a bookkeeping and an accounting career for 11 years, and it was good. But I decided to go back to school, and I went to Cal, and I studied peace and conflict studies, which is like a social justice sort of focus.
Mm-hmm.
And conflict resolution. And then I was a program manager in an environmental nonprofit for about 15 years doing environmental education and working with the public. And I had a depression, and I lost that job by ever having been there a long time. And so for a couple of years, I kind of struggled to recover from that and then find a new job. And I did eventually find a new job, and I have that now, and it's I'm an admin assistant at a nonprofit clinic, and it's okay. It's an okay job, but I feel like I would like to find a professional focus where I can kind of sink some effort into it and then sort of advance myself back again.
First of all, how well is your depression under control, and have you done it?
Yeah, it's very under control.
Great. Okay. Awesome. And professional, when you were a program manager, what felt right and wrong about that work? Where were you good at it? What were you enjoying? What was crappy about it? Because that can offer us some clues as to the kind of professional-level job you might want to go for now.
Yeah. I really liked working with the community a lot. I liked organizing adult education programs, workshops and trainings. I liked being knowledgeable about the subjects that I worked with and being sort of an expert in different areas.
What were you an expert in, or what are you an expert in the was it in the environmental space? What aspect of that?
Like sustainability issues and also resources in the Bay Area.
Okay, well, that's, you know, this is the kind of the generically, you know, these days, there's everybody wants to work for the environment. There's also a million nonprofits that are environmental here in the Bay Area. You're clearly very nonprofit-oriented, given both your work history and your peace and conflict studies thing. So, I mean, have you done the obvious? I mean, I feel like I'm a broken record, but the obvious thing really would be to make a list of 20 nonprofits that are in the environmental space, or that, you know, where you're an admin now. Is the nonprofit you're working for now also in the environmental space?
No.
What is it in?
It's in sort of healthcare services.
And does the goddess within you tell you you'd be wiser to look for a job in the environmental space, healthcare space, or neither?
I'm interested in environment still. I'm not interested in healthcare.
Okay, great. And environmentally, you know, it's a very big field. You say sustainability. You care. Some people just somehow viscerally care more about water or air or hate corporations or whatever. Where is your where is the juice behind your environmental interest?
Yeah, that's a good question. I have a lot of interest.
Animals, forests. You know, where is the juice?
Like environmental health and consumer rights.
Okay, consumer rights, environmental health. So give me an example of, you know, just for the heck of it, give me one example of what you consider an outrage.
An outrage?
Yeah.
That we don't understand the health impacts of a lot of the chemicals on the marketplace.
Okay, so if I said that you were going to make a, your job was to make a list of the, all of the, you know, the food justice kind of and food health, you know, alternative, you know, non-toxic, vegan, all that kind of organizations, and that you were to write them a nice letter that would describe, you know, that you don't have to talk about the depression, but you have been a professional, had to take an admin position, now you're really eager to get back and using more of your professional chops, using your organizing, your writing, whatever it is, those skills you mentioned you had. And that you're wondering if they might be willing to chat with you to see if and how you might be able to help to them. And as well, of course, you can answer ads that are already posted, but so many jobs go behind, you know, are filled behind the scenes. If I said that that's what you need to do, you need to love yourself enough that every day when you come out of work, you need to write one or two such letters to kind of food, healthy food related, toxic food awareness nonprofits. Would you say that's on the money or off the money?
I'd say that's a really strong possibility. But actually, let me ask you this. Lately, I've been thinking that it would be really kind of cool to be able to focus in on like a licensure or like a certificate or some kind of, and it doesn't have to be environmental, that I could sort of get this sort of leg up professionally by... Like, for instance, I do not want to be a nurse, but say a person goes to nursing school and they get a nursing license, like, and there's a job market for that. Like, that really appeals to me. Okay. I'm interested in possibly retraining to have something that's really marketable that I would enjoy.
Great. So let's play a game. I'm going to give you two different health careers. You simply tell me which intuitively feels more appealing.
Okay.
A MRI technician or a nutritionist?
A nutritionist.
I'm not surprised. Nutritionist or phlebotomist? Somebody takes your blood.
A nutritionist.
Nutritionist or respiratory therapist? Somebody who clears lungs when people have, you know, trach tubes and the like.
A nutritionist. By the way, I don't like the healthcare field, just so you know.
But you want a certification, so give me a little more clues as to, give me some clues to move me closer to the right direction.
Like a GIS technician or like a archivist or, you know, just kind of like maybe more data oriented than people oriented in some way. Like,
okay, well, here's one. I love this one. Prospect researcher is one of my very favorites, where nonprofit, because you're very nonprofit-y, you know, nonprofits do a lot of research on donors, their existing donors, to learn if somebody's donated 100 or 500, some relatively small amount, they assign a prospect researcher to them to learn about their psychographic tendencies and other parts of their background so they can hit them up for big money and maybe get them to put the university or the nonprofit in their will. There are also people who manage databases. There's a very famous piece of software called Razor's Edge, R-A-I-S-E-R-S, Razor's Edge, where they manage the databases of donors. Then there are also event planners, people who put on the stupid fundraising. Forgive me for calling them stupid, but I have to go to a lot of them, and I hate them. My wife has to go because she's superintendent of schools. We've got to go to a lot of these things. These stupid gala fundraisers with these auctions where they're giving away, you know, cases of wine for thousands of dollars, not giving away, they auction them off. But so there are, in that whole nonprofit space, there are people who are prospect researchers who do the research. There are database managers, and there are event planners. Does any of that resonate with you as a possible career?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, if I said the way to do it before you get the certification, why don't you contact these food, the small ones are struggling. They can't afford to pay you squat. They'll make you work as a volunteer so you can work for the cause. But the big ones, you know, Food Not Bombs is big these days, or find the nonprofits that match your values, and write that letter and say very often the wisest time to get the certification is after you're hired. Get hired for some low-level job there, get in, and then if they like you, then you can say, you know, geez, there really is this need in the area of database management and the nonprofit donor management. Then you can feel like there's more of a likely payoff for you getting the certificate. If you're just doing it now, you're kind of guessing. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I call those launchpad jobs. Get in, you know, you get into some nonprofit that you believe in, and I don't care if you have to answer phones or whatever. Then get yourself beloved. Find out the unmet needs. Then pitch your boss there, say, hey, you really could use some help in this to bring in more. I'm always focusing on the fundraising side because that's where the money, that's everybody wants to provide the service. You know, we want to help the homeless. We want to, you know, give the workshop. We want to do all that. But that's a revenue coster. People in the nonprofit as well as in the for-profit sector, they care about bringing in the dollars. So if you can bring in the dollars, you're much more likely to get paid decently. Right, like I've written for major magazines, and that's a cost, and they pay me zero because everybody wants to write for the major magazines. True on the show, they pay me zero to do the show because they know it's, you know, people like to do the radio show. So I invite you to go and get expert, work for a nonprofit you believe in, and then find out their unmet need on the fundraising side. Then, if they're excited about that idea, then take a course or two or certified. That would seem to be the right sequence of events. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that does make sense.
All right.
Yeah.
I'll thank you for calling Work with Marty Nemko.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Okay. So, a phone number again if you want to work over some career advice. Phone number here at Work with Marty Nemko and KALW, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. You know, there are really, I was listening to the Best of Our Knowledge, a show on KALW around 9:30, and they were talking about that we are living in this gig economy, in this, you know, they call it the precariat, not the proletariat, the precariat. So many people are living precariously. Everybody wants good work, and with good reason. I found a bunch of quotes about work that really bring some of this home. Longfellow, way back when, wrote, "The heights of great people reached and kept were not attained by sudden flight, but they, while their companions slept, were toiling upward in the night." Somebody named Lucy Larcom wrote, "The beauty of work depends on the way we meet it, whether we arm ourselves each morning to attack it as an enemy that must be vanquished before night, or whether we open our eyes with the sunrise to welcome it as an approaching friend who will keep us delightful company." Jack Valenti wrote, "A widely prevalent notion today seems to demand instant achievement of goals without any of the wearying, frustrating preparation that is indispensable to any task. As an exemplar of the way of life, the professional, that man or woman who injects every new task or duty, no matter how small, with discipline of mind and spirit, is vanishing in America, particularly among those who too often believe that dreams come true because they ought to and not because they are caused to materialize." The great author John Hersey wrote, "I have a kind of contempt for intelligence all by itself. Coupled with energy and willingness, it'll go. Alone, it winds up riding the rails." Theodore Roosevelt wrote, "Far and away the best prize that life offers is the chance to work hard at work worth doing." John F. Kennedy said, "All this will not be finished in the first 100 days, nor will it be finished in the first 1,000 days, nor in the life of this administration, nor even perhaps in our lifetime on this planet. But let us begin." I want to help you begin with your work life, but ever more of these jobs are gig jobs, Mechanical Turk jobs, Task Rabbit jobs, O-Desk, where you're competing in a race to the bottom with people from everywhere from Zambia to Aden, and they pay you crap wages. How do you find good jobs? Well, Career Builder just did a major study of, they found industries that are projected to add at least 10,000 jobs and experience at least 15% growth in employment over the next 5 years. So I'm going to give you my quick little riff on each of them. First is electronic shopping. Everybody knows it's a pain in the butt to go to the mall. I've been saying this for a million years, and there's more supply and better information on each product available on the internet. Now, I know that there are some listeners here to this station who find Amazon too corporate and they don't like it, but there are still, even small businesses are able to compete on the internet because it's really cheap these days to create a website and to, with a little bit of smart marketing, to get Facebook ads, Google AdWords to drive traffic to your site. So really, there's no question that if you want to ride the wave rather than fight the wave, being somehow involved in electronic shopping, whether you are creating your own website or whether you are learning how to do the marketing to get to drive traffic to websites, how to use social media, Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and Pinterest and Snapchat, you know, being an expert at those is where the future is, one of the areas where the future is. Next, the next one that this Career Builder survey found was translation and interpretation services. There's no question we are becoming ever more than ever in American history a nation of immigrants, legal and illegal. And I know for, you know, I'd bet every last dollar in my savings account that Hillary Clinton, when she gets elected, will fulfill her promise to have, quote, comprehensive immigration reform, which will not only bring, quote, all of the illegal immigrants, quote, out of the shadows, but as every other amnesty in the past has done, it has resulted in more immigration because they know that America is not going to be kicking out immigrants in any large quantities. And so the translation and interpretation services are going to grow. But where is the money going to be? It's going to be in specialist translation, medical translation, because the healthcare needs of many of those immigrants is huge. And so they're going to need medical translators in every clinic, in every hospital, in every doctor's office, especially public hospitals and public clinics. Legal translation, for whatever reason, which will go beyond the scope of what I can talk about on this show, the crime rate is very high among illegal immigrants and among immigrants in general compared to the general population. Therefore, there are many people who are immigrants who don't speak good English, who are in the criminal justice system, and because we have a legal system that protects the rights of the innocent, or innocent at least until proven guilty, there will be tremendous need for legal translators. So becoming a medical or a legal translator is going to become invaluable moving forward. Next in the Career Builder survey, an area of growth, is offices of physical, occupational, and speech therapists and audiologists. As the boomers age, they're going to develop more problems, they're going to get strokes, and they're going to need people. I'm not just saying go be a doctor, but in those offices, there are billing clerks, there are office managers, there are paraprofessionals, physical therapists, occupational offices or speech therapists, and indeed audiologists as older people start to have hearing problems. There's not just the audiologist. By the way, that is one of the cooler careers. 3-year doctorate. You get to be an audiologist in 3 years. They get to call you doctor, and there is no question that the demand will continue to grow. So that, whether you're the professional or the paraprofessional, that is a field that's going to grow. Home health care services is expected to grow, but that's crap paying. That's $15 an hour work. It's really great if you don't need the money and you're this nurturing, you know, angel of mercy. We need those folks, but that's a tough job, really tough job. And whether you're visiting them in their homes or they're visiting them in retirement communities, those jobs are available. I hope that when I, hopefully 20 or 30 years from now, need such a person, they're around, but it's a tough job and a low-paid job. It's certainly growing. Next in the area and list of growing fields is telemarketing bureaus. Talk about another crappo job. And again, you're competing with everybody from all over the world who are willing to do it for $3 an hour. So I, you know, while it's growing, I would not encourage my dear listeners to do that kind of work. Really, really, really. Another one that's fast growing is marketing consulting services. I hate that America has become a land of marketing. You know, so many of the dollars in businesses and nonprofits, believe me, nonprofits, are spent not in providing the service or the quality, but in the damn marketing. Image, branding. Everybody said branding, logo design, clever websites, marketing, PR events, stunts, all this other crap. But the reality is it's growing. So if you are like some people, and, you know, again, while there are some KLW listeners who are fine with companies and for-profits, a large component of the KLW listenership is very non-profity or government-y. And in government-y, the government does plenty of marketing, too, of their various programs and whatever. So, you know, if if you're, and I, just because I, Marty Nemko, tend to find a certain personal revulsion to marketing, it doesn't mean that if you really, there is a good product. Let's say, you know, you are going to be a dental teeth cleaner per my reader's guest. And, you know, maybe in the beginning you have to do some marketing. You're not going to get business the first day. So marketing an honorable business is not bad, whether it's for a nonprofit. So don't take my personal revulsion too seriously. If you are willing to market, that is a growing area, because competition in our global economy and the ever greater cost of doing business in America, which are bizarre if you want to hire somebody especially, if you want to do it legally, it's bizarre, and they're really cracking down on illegal independent contractors. You know, where you don't try to, you don't have to pay benefits. If you're going to hire somebody, you have to pay them benefits and all the rest of it. It's going to cost a lot, and you're going to have to do marketing in order to charge the high prices that you're going to need to charge in order to stay in business. So marketing is growing. I have a long list of the rest of these, but I think you've heard enough of that. Let me take one more phone call before the show is over. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. How can I help? Hi. I'm not hearing you.
Hello?
Yes. Can you?
Okay, I'm calling because I'd like some job leads. The first one on your list about the legal translating,
yes,
resonated. I did my first year of law school, and I loved it. And I loved
I didn't hear you. Did your first what?
What I could be doing after I graduated. But strategically, it was not working out because I had too many family responsibilities and business responsibilities to my husband. I would like to know what other aspects of the law I could pursue that would employ that kind of thinking and just plain intellectual ability that I admired so much from my instructors, from my fellow students, that I could pursue, but without that time constraint of 99% of your time going to law school.
Yeah. You know, there are most fields today in increasing numbers are regulated, but there are still, an example of Maya B's, you know, a teeth clean, is not regulated. So being a coach or an advisor, you know, to somebody, you know, I know there are people who are now who are healthcare advocates. It's all another of those few unregulated things where they help people not get screwed by the insurance company, help them get to see the doctor before they die. All of those things, though, if you are fascinated with the idea of using your intellectual abilities to help people in legal matters, you know, being, I know that certainly there are legal clinics, which are mainly staffed by lawyers, and they probably wouldn't let you work there. But if you could informally say, if you are looking for kind of the kind of counsel in perhaps how to choose a lawyer or how to fight with your some entity without without having to hire a lawyer, maybe that kind of a coach, kind of an advisor role might be a way to do that without the certification. What feels right and wrong about that? And what flavor of that would you, what kind of problems would you like to help people solve?
Is it a career?
It depends on how much, you know, is it a career? Then it depends on how much you're willing to market. It depends on how good the service you're going to provide. You know, in the same way, I'm staring at Maya B here, and so it brings her to mind. In the same way, she is able to, for a certain percentage of dogs, able to provide for $70 what vets who want to fully anesthetize the dog and whatever might charge $800 or $1,000. So it becomes a clearly good value proposition, so she's made a career out of it. If you can indeed provide a service that would enable people to save the thousands of dollars going to a lawyer, you know, for example, I know somebody who's not a lawyer. She was a master's in social work, but she had a friend, but this is all, she also fell into it by chance, who was a senior manager at the Postal Service. And there's an incredible number of, I'm looking at the clock, we've got to stop, incredible number of postal workers who complain about the management. She ended up being a mediator with no real training. So I have to leave you with that notion. If you can find a way to add sufficient value that to save people $1,000 in legal expenses, you can use it. I'm looking at the clock. I went way over. I'm sorry. I got to say goodbye. And that is Work with Marty Nemko for this week. I want to thank my border operator, Joanne Marr, and of course, all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. I'll do workovers on callers, and I'll talk with Kevin Kelly, the author of The Inevitables, the 12 technological focuses that will shape our future. Until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemko reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.